No matter if points are gained or points are lost, there will be much to discuss. For analysis regarding tonight's Winnipeg Jets game, here are Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve post-game show starts now.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the first Legal Curve post-game show of the 2021-22 season. I am your host, Drew Mandel. Dave Manuk is on fire. Ezra Ginsberg is below Mr. Manuk. Gentlemen, the Winnipeg Jets dropping.
I'm on fire too, Drew.
I know, but you're not literally on fire like Dave is. You're on fire with all the hot takes that are burning a hole inside of you at this late hour on a Wednesday evening. We'll get to those in the course of the Illegal Curve post-game show here this evening. Game one of 82 in the books, the Winnipeg Jets dropping a 4-1 decision to the Anaheim Ducks. Gentlemen, a game that the Winnipeg Jets will undoubtedly look back on in the first period and rue the missed opportunities and or the sensational goaltending that the Ducks received from John Gibson that Connor Hellebuyck simply could not match on this night. So the first question I have for you guys, game one in the books. Is it time to press the panic button on the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's kind of funny, right, guys? Because, you know, you listen and read to some of the predictions, you know, around the NHL, the media and everything like that. And the Jets seem to be a pretty popular pick. You know, aside from the Colorado Avalanche and the Tampa Bay Lightning, a lot of people are picking the Jets to win the Stanley Cup, which is, you know, pretty surprising because it's been, you know, three or so years, you know, since we've really had those types of predictions with the Jets winning the Cup. But obviously, guys, like, you know, the first period, I mean, was completely dominated by the Jets, especially on those two power plays. Seven shots on that first power play. You know, John Gibson was unbelievable. And, you know, I thought that heading into this game, you know, the Ducks were being a little bit disrespected, to be honest with you. I mean, we know they're one of the youngest teams in the NHL. We know the Ducks are not going to be very good. I think on Saturday's show, Drew, I said that, you know, the Ducks might easily finish last in their division. It's a very bad division, but I mean, this is still a team that has, you know, Ryan Getzlaff, Ricard Raquel. You know, we saw Cam Fowler get in on the scoring, Hampus Lindholm, Josh Manson, who a lot of Jets fans thought, you know, might be acquired, you know, to bolster the Jets top four. Not to mention, you know, Mason McTavish and Trevor Zegras, Jamie Drysdale. I mean, we know all the good young players that the Ducks have in the system. And I mean, look, special teams, it's one of those kind of cliches, but special teams was the difference. I mean, the Ducks convert a couple of their power plays, and the Ducks had one of the worst power plays in the league last year. I can't remember exactly what they were. They might have been the worst. Their penalty kill wasn't very good either, so it was kind of surprising when you consider that, you know, the Jets going into this season got even better on the power play, and they couldn't just seem to buy a goal, and they had a lot of good chances, but yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, this game didn't go the way they wanted. And it kind of, I thought, was a bit of foreshadowing when we saw the goal that was scored by Kevin Shattenkirk, kind of just a bit of a fluke goal. It just wasn't the Jets' night, but I think, you know, you like a lot of things that happened in the first period. You like how the Jets, you know, made it a one-goal game in the second period. But, I mean, we're going to see this Ducks team, obviously, two more times in the next couple of weeks. And let's be honest, guys, like, this got a little bit chippy. Pierre-Luc Dubois and John Gibson were going at it. Obviously, Andrew Kopp, you know, took interference penalty on John Gibson. So, you know, in that respect, I really liked how, you know, this was one of those feisty games, even though it didn't go the Jets' way.
Yeah, I mean, there was some edge towards the game, you know, as it got a little bit later on. And certainly, you know, Andrew Kopp got right in the face of John Gibson there with that hard net drive. And I think that certainly was about sending a message for the next couple of games that these two teams are going to face against each other over the course of the month. To me, Dave, you know what this game reminded me of? If you remember back a few years ago, and I don't remember exactly the season it was, if it was 2 years ago, if it was 3 years ago, the Jets and the Leafs met, I believe, the first game of the season, and the Jets came out like an absolute house on fire, and they absolutely peppered Freddie Anderson with a ton of shots through the first 10 minutes of the game. And Freddie Anderson did what good goalies do when they're on the road and they're facing a charged up team. He kept his team in the fight, stay in the fight. And then the Leafs came back and they scored the opening goal, and you could just feel the team sag. And John Gibson, I think, kept the Ducks in the fight, early on in tonight's game, certainly in the course of that first period. And then, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk scores that goal, and it's a bad goal. And Connor Hellebuyck will be the first to tell you that that's a goal that shouldn't go in under any circumstances, you know, no matter what traffic may have been in front. And there wasn't enough of it that would, you know, justify that kind of goal to go in on the Vezina Trophy winning goaltender. But, you know, Gibson kept the Ducks in the fight early. The Ducks then get that goal from Shattenkirk, and boom, they have life, and they feel as though they can stay in the game and keep, you know, keep with the Jets, because they know that they have when you have a goalie like Gibson behind you, you always feel like you have a shot to win a game.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that Gibson is a difference maker. I mean, he's a phenomenal goaltender. The Ducks haven't always given him a tremendous amount of help, as you and I were talking about that, how he hasn't exactly been blessed with great Anaheim Ducks teams, which is unfortunate because he is such a good goaltender. And, you know, look, you're not going to, you know, these guys are NHL players as well. And, you know, they talked about on the broadcast, they're a young Anaheim team, but they have a lot of talent. And, you know, they're not expected to win a ton of games, but you can't go in and expect to beat every team, and you're not going to have that opportunity. And it was disjointed. I mean, you had the unbalanced Jets look like they were controlling all of the play. All the shots were coming from the Jets. Possession was the Jets, and Gibson was the difference maker. And then they get a little life, you know, on the first shot to kind of steal that momentum back from Winnipeg, because Winnipeg did everything but score, obviously. And then you're sitting there watching this and you're thinking, well, you're not out of it. And then all of a sudden, well, now they've regained even more, they've taken more momentum. So it was hard for Winnipeg because, you know, they seem to be doing the right things. And we were talking about this idea of Mark Scheifele not being in the lineup and sure, missing your top center. And was the decision, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Cole Perfetti. Is this going to be a one-off for the Jets 2020 first rounder? Will he, you know, now that Mark Scheifele's back, what is the likelihood of him sticking around? Would it maybe have been advantageous to see what he could do at center with Wheeler and Connor, mostly because then you're not disrupting three lines or two lines, I should say. And instead you're, you know, because you ultimately that's what you ended up doing, right? You put Stasny up to the first, you know, to center, and then you've got Harkins, you know, there, and then you've got Vesalainen, who was playing on the third line, now on the fourth line. So I think that's part of the disruption. And I know the Jets tried to mitigate that by moving guys around throughout the course of preseason, but preseason isn't an actual game. And I think that it just seemed discombobulated, other than a few guys. Like, I mean, Nikolai Ehlers is phenomenal. I mean, there's no other word to describe. I mean, Kyle Connor, I mean, as he said it, how do you leave Kyle Connor that open? He's going to put that puck in the back of the net every single time. But Nick Ehlers, I mean, some of the things he was doing in that first period, I think it was on the power play where he kept the puck along the wall and then dipsy doodled around the Ducks forward and kept maintaining possession and then passed it off. I mean, he was doing what he could to try and keep his team in this game. And I thought he stood out for the right reasons for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. But overall, I just didn't think they had it. I mean, and look, they had a lot of shots and they had a lot of possession. And Jod Gibson's a good goaltender. So you're not always going to be able to, even if you have a better team, you're not always going to be able to win, because sometimes a good goaltender, as the Jets fans should know, because they've seen it from Connor Hellebuyck, been able to do you know, John Gibson did for his team tonight.
Exactly. Sometimes you're the goalie, the team that goalies other teams, and sometimes you get goalied, you know, I think it's a little too simplistic to simply say that the Jets got goalied, because, you know, Gibson certainly was better than Hellebuyck. But, you know, I think after the first period, you know, after that, you know, initial barrage by the Jets and the early power play opportunities, I thought that the Ducks certainly were, you know, they were decent against the Jets at 5-on-5. So much of this game, though, as he was played on the special teams, that I think it really resulted in some disjointed 5-on-5 action. And I think that's just a function of, I mean, how many penalties were there throughout the course of this game? There certainly, you know, the Ducks had, you know, 24 penalty minutes. Now, I think that includes a 10-minute misconduct to Derek Grant. And the Jets had 14 penalty minutes. So if you're saying, you know, each team took 7 minor penalties and some of those were offsetting, notwithstanding that, just a lot of the game was played, you know, with special teams. And I thought as a result, the 5-on-5 play in the course of the game was not smooth. It was not reflective of, I mean, it was reflective of two teams playing their first game of the season at 5-on-5.
Yeah, exactly. And you just mentioned it, Drew, when you have that many penalties, it's really tough to get a flow going at 5-on-5, right? But I agree with you. It seemed like at times, you know, the Jets really couldn't get much going. They couldn't sustain a lot of pressure in the zone. And I thought, guys, really tonight, the Jets weren't dictating the pace enough. Like, you saw it a little bit. And when Kyle Connor scored the goal, and he was obviously completely wide open, I'm not sure what the Ducks defense was doing there. That's, you know, one of the guys, one of the main guys that you don't want to leave completely wide open, along with
you might want to cover one of the best goal scorers in the league. I'm just saying.
Well, and it was a nice pass by Blake Wheeler. Let's give him credit. But I mean, he was completely wide open. But, you know, I thought that the Jets, you know, at times they just weren't sustaining enough pressure, especially, you know, when they were needing that tying goal kind of late in the second period. And obviously the power play let them down a little bit, but the power play, you know, looked good. And obviously, you know, Adam Lowry is not a guy that you expect to see, you know, on the top power play unit, but that's because, of course, Mark Scheifele, you know, was out of this game with the suspension. So obviously, you know, Scheifele is going to be back on that top power play unit, but Ehlers looked really good. You know, Connor looked good. Wheeler had a couple of passes that were intercepted, but I thought he looked pretty sharp for the most part. Morrissey, you can tell, guys, I mean, this is just a continuation from the preseason. Morrissey has a lot more confidence with the puck than he did at points last year. He wasn't always lacking confidence, but at times he was. And I thought, you know, Nate Schmidt had a very strong game. And obviously, you know, on the second goal by Mason McTavish, guys, you know, I think Neil Pionk was out there with Brendan Dillon, but a couple of guys, like, you know, just went to the same player, and McTavish was just, you know, left alone there, and he just jumped on the rebound. And, you know, when a goalie's playing like that, you get down two goals, even though, as we talked about, I mean, the Jets made it a one-goal game, and it looked like they were, you know, going to tie up that game, but it's a little bit demoralizing, especially when you're on the road and, you know, you're without Scheifele and you're trying to get maybe Perfetti on the board because McTavish is already on the board with his first NHL game. But I think there was a lot to like in this game, but it is one game, and it's, as Drew mentioned, it's the first game of the season, and you're going to have, you know, some rough patches, even though the preseason, the Jets definitely started to get, you know, really find their game, especially in that second last game against Calgary. But this was just a game where if you get a power play goal and it's a tie game, then we obviously know that, you know, the third period is going to be a lot different and they'll make some adjustments. And you're probably going to see, I imagine you're going to see similar lines that we saw in the final couple of preseason games with, you know, Kopp, Dubois, and Ehlers there. Didn't think Dubois had his sharpest game. He was obviously engaged physically, but I just didn't think he had a lot of impact on the game at even strength offensively.
He had a couple of times, you know, to your point, and we'll start talking about players individually as we continue on with the Illegal Curve post-game show here. The clock's striking midnight. It is now Thursday, the 14th of October. We say good morning to everybody joining us here on the show, and nice to see so many of you joining us. Reminder, we do it each and every game, so we'll see you back here again on Saturday night for another post-game show, but we'll have the Saturday Illegal Curve hockey show before that. And you mentioned Dubois, Ezzy, and I thought he had some, you know, glimpses where there were a couple noticeable opportunities. One time where he sort of stole the puck, used that long reach of his and tucked a shot sort of just wide past the far post. But, you know, again, it was hit or miss, I think, is how I would describe Pierre-Luc Dubois' game tonight. And he's a key, it's too dramatic to say that the Jets' chances this season hinge on his success and hinge on his performance, but he certainly... The Jets need him to be a better player. And I thought he was probably better than he was last year, but which is, you know, the question, the equivalent of damning with faint praise, Dave. But there were some times where I noticed him doing good things tonight. And I'm not just talking about when he got into that headlock from John Gibson there, that ended up drawing Gibson's second penalty of the game.
Yeah. I mean, there still needs to be more from Pierre-Luc Dubois. There's no question about it. I mean, you were traded for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic. I mean, you were brought in for a very specific reason, and it's not to be a peripheral player on the Winnipeg Jets. It's to be a dynamic impact player replacing a dynamic impact player and a secondary piece who could have had potentially an impact. So, yeah, there's pressure on Pierre-Luc Dubois, and you know, nobody's going to be perfect for 82 games. It just doesn't happen. Or, I mean, unless your name's Connor McDavid, but there's one Connor McDavid. So the truth is that nobody's going to be perfect the entire season. And, you know, as and I were talking about it before the postgame show started, that, you know, you don't lose your mind after one game. If the Jets would have won 4-1, you're not planning a parade. You're not saying that after one game, you know, that suddenly everything is wonderful. And if the Jets lose the game, it's the same thing. You don't lose your mind over one game. It's one of 82. There's a lot of hockey still to go in the season. So you don't start to judge players based on one game. You're not going to say Connor Hellebuyck, who's a Vezina a winner and a Vezina finalist, mm-hmm. shouldn't get another start in net. You just don't make these grand pronouncements. I mean, you could, but I just don't think
it won't stop people from doing it. But it's not necessarily the
well. You boys remember what happened last year, obviously it was 2 years ago because the Jets mm-hmm. didn't play any American teams. What was it, 52 saves or something like that? So if I was a betting man, I would bet that Connor Hellebuck's going to either get a shutout next game or he's going to probably only let in one. He always responds well after a quote-unquote bad game. I didn't think it was necessarily a bad game. You know, even though the first goal by Shattenkirk, I mean, was a little bit of a screen. I thought it might have been tipped originally. Let's be honest. I mean, that wasn't the determining factor in this game, but we expect Hellebuyck to be in the net on Saturday night, and he's most likely going to make it a little difficult for the Sharks to score any goals.
Look, there's no question. I mean,
I just want to say, like, I agree with, you know, a lot of, you know, MB Flyer is one of many people who have been saying this throughout the course of the broadcast already. Mm-hmm. There was no net front presence, and it really was, you know, somewhat emblematic of the problems that for the Jets suffering. I mean, how did the Ducks score their goals? Guys in front of the net,
yeah,
right, causing havoc in front of the net. The Jets just didn't have it.
On the power play.
Yeah. John Gibson was like, look, he was good, but he also, when you have that sort of ability to see the shot, you know, Blake Wheeler, I remember early in the first period, took a shot. I'm like, you're not beating John Gibson with that shot.
It will never not be funny watching Blake Wheeler try to one-time the puck on a power play. I mean, Blake Wheeler is, you know, whatever, you know, look, I'm in no position to criticize any professional athlete because obviously I'm not one. I'm pretty sure everyone knew that. But it's never not funny watching Blake Wheeler try and one-time a shot on the power play. He just doesn't, it's not his strength.
No,
and
of course not.
And you're putting him in a position to fail to some degree by asking him to play that role. And I know he's not regularly playing that role, and it's a mm-hmm. function of Scheifele not being in the lineup tonight. But I mean, Blake Wheeler is a setup man. He is a guy who's going to feather that pass across. He's not the guy to one time it. And I mean, it's just, there were two or three opportunities, you know, one after another early in one of the Jets power plays where he's just, you know, it was like watching me take a shot when I was, you know, 12 and barely able to stand on my skates.
Yeah. And so I think that's just one of those things, but you know, well, like I said previously, you're not losing your mind over one game. You're missing Mark Scheifele. You know, he's obviously a big driver for this team. You know, it's not every day you lose your number one center. And I just think it's that's kind of, like I said, it's a function of, you know, how does this team react to this? I mean, like I said, you're not canceling the parade. You're not planning a parade after game one. You don't do that in this sport. So there's things that are concerning. I thought, you know, Blake Wheeler didn't have a very strong game. Mm-hmm. He made a nice pass, obviously, on the Kyle Connor goal. But, you know, early in the power play, he was, you know, passing pucks across and getting intercepted. And he just didn't look like he had it. And so, you know, are you putting Blake Wheeler on the fourth line? I know that there's gonna be some comments that probably say yes, do it. But the truth is,
people who already have him healthy scratched for next game in the comments.
Sure, but I just think like it wasn't his best game. That I think it's one of those things that Well, I'm not gonna say what his name is, but he agrees with me. So it wasn't his strongest game, and I think it's like a function of, you're not gonna lose your mind over this one game.
Well, and also, guys, let's give the Ducks a little bit more credit here. Like I said this earlier, like, I don't think anybody, not only is nobody picking the Ducks to win the Stanley Cup, most people aren't predicting them to make the playoffs or really even be in contention for a playoff spot. But when you're talking about one game here, I mean, this happens, like, think of international hockey. Like, it's a game. And going into this game, I almost felt like the Ducks were such a heavy underdog. I don't know why I was thinking about this, because obviously, you know, 9 out of 10 people are going to take the Jets in that game. But look, you've got Mason McTavish playing his first ever NHL game, right? You've got B.O. Prule, who's Benoit Olivier Groulx. It's not, you know, Bo. It's B.O. is an acronym. You know, I thought he was engaged physically. He's a second round pick. You know, you've got Jamie Drysdale. This is his first full NHL season. Trevor Zegras, he's still eligible for the Calder Trophy. He played 24 games last year. I mean, we talked about it, guys, right? Like, you know, this Ducks team, they're not going to be very good this year, but I feel like they're going to surprise a lot of teams this year, similar to kind of how Ottawa was surprising teams last year.
Well, look, when you have goaltending like what John Gibson provided and you have young talent, you're going to win some games. It's just that simple. You are going to win some games. You're not going to go 0-82. And that's why the Jets really needed to, you know, there's two turning points from my perspective. One, when the Jets weren't able to capitalize on those early power play opportunities. I mean, you know, because they had, you know, what were the shots at the end of the first period? 15-6 for the Winnipeg Jets. I think something like that. And a lot of those opportunities were came on the power play. You know, the Jets had two power plays in the first 8 minutes of the game, and they weren't able to get anything past John Gibson. So that's turning point number one. And then turning point number two, again, also goes back to John Gibson, when he makes that save off of Josh Morrissey, again, on the power play in the second period after Kyle Connor has, you know, cut the lead to one. The Jets really, you know, we talked about that beautiful goal, odd man rush. Blake Wheeler sort of looks off the shot and finds Kyle Connor all alone. And then, you know, on a couple minutes later, the Jets get that power play opportunity. And again, they have good pressure, and Josh Morrissey, you know, look, it's a great save by a great goaltender. There's a reason why John Gibson and Connor Hellebuck are 1 and 1A for the Team USA, you know, expected to be, for Team USA at the upcoming Olympics. It's because John Gibson is a fantastic goaltender who, you know, is the backbone of the Anaheim Ducks. Those are your two turning points from my perspective. You know, the Jets can't score the first goal. If Jets get the first goal in the game, I think it's a completely different contest. And then they can't equalize the game, where it probably becomes a completely different contest. Instead, Gibson makes the save. The Jets, you know, take a penalty, and the Jets' the Ducks' power play was better than the Jets' penalty kill. And boom, 3-1, and the Jets really didn't really have any sort of answer after that. I don't think after that 3-1 goal, the Jets really had anything I would describe as a grade A opportunity to cut it from a 2-goal lead to a 1-goal lead. And then we know how the game ended at that point in time after, you know, for the third period.
Yeah. And then we talked about the penalties as well. There wasn't a lot of flow there. And, you know, you started to get into the, you know, you had the roughing penalties and everything like that. And so, you know, it wasn't one of those games where you feel like, you mentioned this earlier, Drew, like you don't feel like, you know, it was stolen by John Gibson. I mean, Anaheim just was opportunistic. They took advantage on the power play and everything like that. And I mean, look, if the Jets lose their first two games here of the season, if they lose to the Sharks, I think you're a little bit more concerned. I mean, obviously, you're not going to start panicking, but you definitely don't want to go back home for your home opener against Anaheim 1-2 or even 0-3, right? So I should say 0-3 or even 1-2, not the other way around. But I mean, obviously, you're going to have to, you know, to find a way to get at least a point in San Jose, and you're going to face Anaheim again. But it goes back to what I said before, guys, like you got to give the Ducks a little bit more credit. You're absolutely right, Drew. I mean, John Gibson, I mean, if the Ducks are going to have any chance to win some games this year, Gibson is going to have to be really good. I mean, we know the Ducks are not a very good offensive team. You know, even though, you know, you're going to get a boost from having, you know, a guy like Zegras the full year. I really think, you know, I know a lot of people are picking Zegras for the Calder Trophy, but I mean, this guy's just so talented. He kind of reminds you a little bit of Kyle Connor sometimes, just the, you know, the way he can, you know, shoot the puck and create plays. And he's got such a high hockey IQ. But, you know, it goes back to what Dave said before, you know, like, I just don't know, you know, how much you can take from this game. I mean, I think, you know, you probably don't like some of the things that happened in the latter stages of the game. To me, it looked like the Jets kind of were coming unglued a little bit. Like they kind of were letting the Ducks get inside of their heads. That's just kind of my own opinion.
There was no push from the Jets. you know, when it was 3-1, you know, and to your point here, Ezzy, when it was 3-1, there was no real push from the Jets, and they had that early power play opportunity in the third period. Remember, you know, again, you know, going back to special teams, because it really was a story of tonight's game, you know, early in that third period, and Adam Henrique trips Neil Pionk on offensive zone penalty, and the Jets should have an opportunity here. And what happens? That opportunity only lasts a grand total of 45 seconds when then Neil Pionk takes a holding call against Mason McTavish. Mason McTavish, aside from John Gibson, was probably the Anaheim Ducks, one of the Anaheim Ducks, certainly their best players. This is a kid. This is a guy who's the youngest ever goal scorer for the Anaheim Ducks after he scored early in tonight's game. You know, the Jets, the opportunities were there, and the Jets couldn't capitalize on them. You didn't see that push. And again, I'm not reading too much into it tonight, but I'm saying that, you know, it is something that you have to, that it is a takeaway from tonight's contest, Dave, is that the push and the pushback from the Jets, particularly in the third period, just wasn't there tonight. That, coupled with the lack of success on the power play in the first period, plus really not, you know, nothing, you know, 5-on-5, their 5-on-5 play, where you would expect them to be more effective than an Anaheim Ducks team, was really, you know, if I had to point to one area that was most concerning to me of tonight's game, I would say the 5-on-5 play and the lack thereof and the lack of control at 5-on-5 from the Jets would be where I would have to, where I would say I would, you know, press the panic button if I had one and if I wanted to press one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair assessment, Drew. I didn't think, you know, watching that third period, despite the fact that Paul Maurice pulled the goaltender with, 5:20 something left in the game, down by 3 goals, there was, you know, with this Jets team, you get feeling, you know, we've watched them enough to know that sometimes you can get a feeling like, oh, this team has what it takes to have a comeback.
They needed Josh Archibald to go cannonballing at Logan Stanley's knees.
So that was one of those wise decisions when I didn't leave the arena, even though they were down significantly. I was like, well, maybe I'll stick around a little bit longer.
By the way, Archibald's got to get the vaccine before that can happen.
No, Archibald's out. He's got COVID-related heart inflammation. He's not.
I think he's got that. I think he's similar to what Letestu had to deal with. But But anyways,
I take that back. I thought he was refusing to get the vaccine.
He is also unvaxxed. He's unvaccinated, got COVID, got heart inflammation.
Focus.
You're right. We're not talking about COVID.
So the point is that now you've derailed me. But I think it's just a function of this team just didn't have it. They just didn't. And again, I'm not trying to make excuses. I don't really care one way or another. But I'm just telling you from what I observed watching that game, and it's amazing really watching like. You really just want to analyze. I mean, Cole Perfetti, unfortunately, he didn't really get a chance. His, you know, 2020 first rounder makes his NHL debut. A lot of excitement for him and his family at this opportunity. But, you know, he plays a total of 9 minutes because of all the special teams play, because of the power play, because of the penalty kills. I mean, and that didn't help either. I mean, the refs, I get that the refs are calling it tighter, but like I think Ed said to me at one point, he goes, how many penalties is they going to call? Like everything's a penalty. And I know that you're trying to set the tone early in the season and have the players adjust, but it does kill a bit of the game flow, right? When every 10 seconds there's a whistle. So, and I'm not saying that was to the Jets' benefit or detriment because it applies to both teams. I just thought it killed a bit of the flow of the game. But I know, Drew, I don't think the Jets really seemed, other than what we saw in that first period. I didn't think that the Jets were a team that looked like they were dominating Anaheim by any stretch and really didn't look like there was any significant ability to make that pushback that we've seen from this team when down that they, traditionally in the last few years. I didn't think in that third period that there was any vision of that.
Well, as you know, there's the old expression, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I think Winnipeg Jets fans are a lot fonder of Mark Scheifele after not having him in the lineup tonight for the Winnipeg Jets, because you really did notice, I thought, his absence. I mean, we talked about it on the power play. You know, those power play opportunities probably look different if Scheifele and his quality shot is where we're used to seeing it. And really, you know, Mark Scheifele at this point in his career should be a guy that can, you know, impose his will on some of the younger Anaheim Ducks players and is a guy who is obviously, you know, thought of as one of the top, you know, 10, top 15 players in the NHL. So, you know, him not being in the lineup certainly was a factor, I thought, in tonight's game. And the Jets will welcome him back on Saturday night against San Jose with open arms and then some.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that, Drew. I mean, but the power play to me, it wasn't that it didn't look good. It just didn't, there was no finish, right? Like we talked about the first period power plays. Like, guys, like it's funny because on Saturday's show, we were talking about how ideally you don't want the first power play out there for a minute and a half. And they were out there for a minute and 50 seconds.
The first power play, seven shots.
Yeah. So, I mean, whenever you have seven shots on a power play, obviously it looks pretty good. And I thought Neil Pionk really looked dangerous, especially in the first period on the power play. But, yeah, I mean, you're always going to miss Scheifele. It's like the same thing, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning without Braden Point or without, you know, Victor Hedman, that type of thing, right? You mentioned it earlier, Drew, about, you know, how demoralizing it can be when you're playing that well. And, you know, Jansen Harkins, we should talk about him and how he drew two penalties. And I know a lot of people in the chat are talking about, you know, Vesalainen now, he didn't play particularly well. You know, I agree. I mean, I don't know how much you can really make of that because of the fact that that line was really kind of a mishmash. And I don't know if that's necessarily going to be, you know, the line that you see all year long, right? Evgeny Svechnikov, of course, just signed the contract. Riley Nash is obviously going to be a staple of that fourth line along with Svechnikov, but it's kind of unclear, you know, how does Vesalainen fit in on this team, guys? Like, he's definitely got to put in a better effort than he did tonight. Like, I'm not saying he had the worst game, but I obviously, you know, can't say that he was one of the best Jets either.
No, to your point, if we, you know, entering the start of the season, to your point, if we thought that Jansen Harkins was more earmarked for a fourth line role, maybe playing with Riley Nash and Svechnikov, and Vesalainen would be playing with Lowry and with Stasny. Well, Jansen Harkins, in my estimation, was certainly one of the better Winnipeg Jets forwards in tonight's game, particularly at 5-on-5. I mean, that's where he gets his, that's where he plays. He plays at 5-on-5. I'm looking at the time on ice here. You know, he played, you know, 8:59, so just under 9 minutes at 5-on-5, no power play time as you'd expect, and 40 seconds shorthanded. But in those 9 minutes that he was on the ice at 5-on-5, Dave, Jansen Harkins to me was certainly noticeable. This is a guy who, you know, obviously had his entire season last year derailed. Everyone thought that he was going to be a regular, didn't end up being a regular due to, you know, injuries and just really never getting off on a good foot. Tonight, in his 9 minutes of ice time, he was certainly noticeable and probably looked better suited to be in maybe that third line role than Vesalainen was, who played Vesalainen was at looking here 7 minutes and 10 seconds at even strength and a relatively uneventful 7:10 at even strength, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I've as you guys know, I've been a Harkins booster for quite some time from his time with the Moose. And you're not really going to find someone who works harder to get better. And he really is, you know, one of those players. And his skating isn't great, but it's not horrible. It's just that he's not one of the better skaters on the team. But he's got the smarts. He's got the intelligence. He really has that ability to see plays, get open. He's got a decent shot. And yeah, I mean, I've long advocated that I think Jansen Harkins is better suited for, you know, more than cleanup duty on aisle seven, you know, in with 4 minutes in the third, you know, total on the fourth line.
What are they selling on aisle seven? Is aisle seven meats? Is that cereals? Is it jams? You know, is it syrups? Like how big is the cleanup that needs to be done?
I'll be honest with you, Drew. When I go to the grocery store, there's like, I go to buy chocolate milk and like candy. So, I mean, that's the extent of my grocery store shopping. So I couldn't tell you what's available on aisle seven, quite frankly. So, no, I mean, but here's a guy who, if you remember when the Jets played against the Flames in the bubble in the playoffs, that goal he scored, he does have the ability to get into the right spots. And we saw it with his progression from, you know, a fringe guy with the Moose to a top line player on Manitoba. And he's just pushed hard. He's always pushed hard to get more. So now he's earned a spot on the opening day roster. I've long said that you could throw him into a wing role and keep Kopp with, I mean, I don't want to harp on Andrew Kopp, but I mean, he's got to be like, he didn't finish with his opportunities this preseason. And if you want to be a second line winger, you got to finish your scoring opportunities when they come. So like if you're not going to, then you're probably better suited to be a third line winger that does what he could do with Adam Lowry and potentially like an Evgeny Svechnikov than what he's doing on the second line. And I think that's a player like that. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on. Look, there's pressure on all these guys, because as we've been talking about since before the season began, there are expectations. They have the weight of expectations on them now. There's no, there's no excuses. You know, the team needed to do what they did in the offseason. They addressed their concerns. Schmidt, as he said it earlier, and I agree, I thought Schmidt looked good. I thought Dylan was solid, made some big hits. I thought they were good. I thought Josh Morrissey, showing us what Josh Morrissey can do. I think he's, putting last season behind him. And even though I said on Saturday's show, we don't read too much into the preseason. And then I read into the preseason, I thought Morrissey, would look good, but I think he's continued that. And I think that there's going to be pressure on these guys, and you can't shy away from it. That's what you get paid millions of dollars to do, is to be able to handle this pressure. So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot on Andrew Kopp. And if you can't handle it, and if you can't show that you can score and put the puck in the net, it goes for all these guys. It goes for Wheeler. It goes for, Kyle Connor's going to put the puck in the net. But I just think, and I'm not going to, like I said, you don't lose your mind after one game. But I just think that there are players who have that offensive ability that if you don't have it from one of these guys, you have to start thinking about it. Not after game one, but eventually.
But you don't lose your mind, but you also, in having said that, there's going to be more pressure on the Jets in this game. There's always going to be pressure on a team that loses the first game of the season. But I think, because of the schedule and because of the fact that, the Jets start the season with three games on the road and it's a soft schedule. We talked about that, guys. Like, the first, 2-3 weeks of the season is not a tough schedule, even though you start off with 6 of 8 on the road and then come home for 7 in a row. So there is going to be a little bit more pressure in that game on Saturday night. And I mentioned earlier, I think the Jets are going to have a much better effort, and Hellebuck, is always better after, a loss in which he allows, 3 or more goals. But I think, with Scheifele coming back, there's no reason why this team can't win. I mean, they're not going to take the Sharks lightly, especially after, the Ducks beat them 4-1 in the season opener. But I think right now, Dave, to your point, these lines are not set in stone. And we knew that there was a chance that you would see, a player like Paul Stastny possibly move up back into the top six. Andrew Kopp, bump down to the – sorry, I have – That comment threw me off a little bit.
For the podcast listeners, The comment is from Kenny's water bottle, who's usually pretty funny, saying, "Does Ezzy have a clip-on beard? I swear he shaved 4 days ago." And now Ezzy is just a hairy beard. Beast.
I'm just a hairy dude, and my 2-year-old son Ruben is also. I can already tell that he's going to have, my hairiness, but. Clearly, I need to shave more often, but I did used to wear a clip-on tie regularly. Dave remembers sometimes in the press box, I used to rock the old clip-on tie. So no clip-on beard, but once in a while, I'll whip out that clip-on tie.
He not only does he bring great hockey analysis, he also brings excellent fashion advice. That's Ezra Ginsberg joining us this morning now on the Illegal Curve post-game show. Let's take our first break. Let's take our only break. We actually only usually take one break during these post-game shows. We'll take a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll try and get some post-game audio. We'll do a little bit more insight into some of the Winnipeg Jets players. We'll look ahead to Saturday. We'll look around what happened throughout the NHL on this, the second day of the 2021-22 season. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're watching the Illegal Curve post-game show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. A big Illegal Curve welcome to Tough Duck, our newest sponsor here on the Illegal Curve post-game show. We have a giveaway courtesy of our friends at Tough Duck. Ezzy, at some point in time during this post-game show, is going to pick out the hardest comment. Is that what it is? The toughest comment?
Yeah, we're going to go with the hardest hitting comment.
The hardest hitting comment in the chat room and on our social media feeds. As he's going to pick one out, he's going to award a Tough Duck toque. Is that correct?
Duck toque to give away. And we're also going to lead up to, at the end of the month, we're going to have a grand prize draw. So we'll have a little bit more details on social media about that, but we're going to have a grand prize draw. But after every game, we're going to give away a free toque courtesy of Tough Duck to the hardest hitting comment.
To the hardest hitting comment. So keep those comments coming. And hardest hitting doesn't mean rude. Hardest hitting just means maybe insightful or funny. It's basically whatever we determine to be the hardest hitting comment. So big thank you to our new friends at Tough Duck for joining the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. They and all of our advertisers make this possible. So we do encourage you to check them out. Check out all of our advertisers, toughduck.com. Work to live, live to play. We're back here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is now 12:30. In the morning on Thursday morning. We welcome everybody and see that there's so many of you still joining us. If you haven't already done so, smash that like button, hit that thumbs up. Also remember, if you haven't already done so, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Get alerted each and every time we go live. We'll go live on Saturday night after the Jets and the San Jose Sharks. We'll go live Saturday morning with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk, of Winnipeg Jets talk, from 9 a.m. to right about 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. You can't get enough of us, and I promise you, you won't be able to get away from us either.
I actually think you can definitely get enough of us.
Well, they're here. It's 12:30 in the morning, and there's still a couple hundred people here. So obviously, we're doing something right, or you know, or everyone else has got way too much time on their hands. It's one or the other, but we appreciate
it. Guys, this is the first post-game show of the season. They're excited.
Hey, I don't blame them. Exactly.
Of course, we did 28 plus all the ones and eight in the postseason. So a few more this year than we did last year, but we're looking forward to it. And they didn't go easy. The schedule maker didn't go easy on us, starting with the West Coast road trip right off the bat.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Nighthawk, so it doesn't really bother me, but a little bit late.
It'll be an early morning for Mr. Ginsburg and myself, undoubtedly. And Dave obviously got all the website work that he's going to get onto when we're done here with the post-game show. Available, of course, with our friends at illegalcurve.com. We're going to hear from Jets head coach Paul Maurice coming up here in a couple of minutes. Some thoughts, guys, though, on Cole Perfetti. He also met with the media post-game, and I had it on my second screen here, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this guy can't be an NHL player. I mean, it's amazing. I know they all look young when they come into the league, but Perfetti looks extra young, or maybe I'm just looking extra old. It's one or the other, but
we're really old, your thoughts
I guess on the performance of Cole Perfetti in his NHL debut tonight.
First off, just awesome that Perfetti gets to make his NHL regular season debut. I mean, partly because Mark Scheifele is out of the lineup, and we'll see what happened, guys, but you know, there's obviously the chance that, you know, he's reassigned to the Moose. I think Dave would agree with that. And boy, the Moose are looking like a stacked team right now with Heinola going down. And obviously when Dylan Sandberg comes back from injury, that defense, as Dave mentioned on Twitter, I mean, it's probably going to be, you know, one of the best defense cores in the entire American Hockey League. It's going to be really exciting to watch those guys develop this year. But I mean, he didn't play much, right, Drew? Like we talked about that earlier. You know, he was on that third line, but just didn't get a lot of playing time because he didn't play at even, pardon me, he didn't play, he did play at even strength, should say, he didn't play on the power play and didn't play on the penalty kill, right?
Well, 949 of even strength time for Cole Perfetti. Right. He's not awarded with any power play time, but I could have sworn he had a power play shift when Pierre-Luc Dubois was in the box, but maybe it just happened just as the power play ended. But,
no, and I mean, that's not surprising, right, guys? Because we talked about it earlier. When you're missing Scheifele, I mean, clearly Perfetti, you know, he would have got in on the second power play unit, but I just don't think, you know, it was the right situation. I mean, if Paul Maurice, you know, it's not a question of confidence. I think it's just the situation. And then obviously the Jets are chasing the game. So when you're getting those power plays in the second period, I don't know if you're necessarily going to make that in-game switch, because I'm not sure how much Perfetti had practiced on either power play unit during training camp. But, you know, I mean, the skill is always evident from Cole Perfetti, right? Like, he's not going to show up, you know, there's not a lot of notable things that happened, you know, on the score sheet. But, you know, to me, this was just about him getting his feet wet, getting his first NHL regular season game. And as I mentioned before, you know, I think there's a good chance that he's going to be reassigned to the Moose, which is obviously not a bad thing. He's going to absolutely tear up the American Hockey League, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's back playing in the NHL very soon. I still think there's a good chance, you know, that Perfetti plays some games in the NHL. It's tough to say, you know, if that's going to be, you know, over 10, but let's look at it this way, guys. I mean, a guy like Jansen Harkins, we saw it with Kyle Connor when he went back to the Moose. I mean, sometimes they force the Jets' hand, right? The way they play in the American Hockey League. So I think that's going to be one of the things to watch. Like, how well does Cole Perfetti play? We know he's going to score some goals, right? Like, Dave watched him more than anybody. And he was really good last year for the Moose. He's even going to be better this year. But yeah, it wasn't a game where he necessarily stood out, Drew. You saw a few plays that he made, you know, where the skill was clearly evident.
He didn't look out of place,
but,
though. Sometimes there's games where, you know, a young player looks out of place, and he certainly didn't look out of place, Dave. And you've watched Cole Perfetti probably more than anybody in the city of Winnipeg, given your watching of the Moose last year. Mm-hmm. And you've spoken many times before on this show about his intelligence and about his skill set and just about his ability to be noticeable. And I thought, you know, he certainly wasn't the most noticeable Winnipeg Jet player, for better or worse, but he certainly wasn't completely invisible. And I think that's sort of, in some regards, what you want from a young player. I would echo what Ezzy said. He can probably go back, and I expect he'd go back and play with the Moose. Maybe they keep him here on the road trip for the rest of the next couple games, and then he goes to play with the Moose. Mm-hmm. But it would not surprise me to see him go play with the Moose, Dave, and have great success like he did last year, and then maybe come up and be a this year's version of Cole Caulfield from the Montreal Canadiens last year.
Yeah, and I think as he hit it on the head, I mean, I was talking about this earlier, unrelated to today's game, but just the idea of how much better I think this Moose team is going to be. Like, they were good last year. They went on a remarkable run towards the end of the season. This is a Jets show and a Moose show. I'm going to try and not sideline too much from it, but as he touched on the defense, and how often have we ever been able to say that six of the Jets prospects, Heinola, Kovacevic, Samberg, Lundmark, Chisholm, and Gavanke. And technically Noje is a draft pick, but six of the Jets defensive prospects are now going to be in the Moose system. In addition to, you've got some very good forwards. So I think, like, you're going to have a really good team. You've got, like, David Gustafson. You've got this Austin Pagansky. You've got, Mikey Essiemont. You've got Luke Johnson. You've got Cole Perfetti. You're going to have
CJ Cease. Cease.
So you're going to have this really good nucleus. And you've got Mikael Burden and Arvid Holm as your goaltenders. So this,
I can tell Dave M's getting very excited about the the start of the Moose season. I'll tell you that much.
I think that was fairly evident when he attended the Moose Bison scrimmage that I don't think anybody else in the city of Winnipeg knew about.
No,
that was when all of a sudden I'm on Twitter and Dave is at the Moose Bison scrimmage. I'm like, dear God, man, that is a loyal Moose insider right there. The man can't get enough of his Manitoba Moose.
I had to get in there and see what was going on. And then the best was, like, people were getting mad that I wasn't, like, tweeting out more about the game. I was like, guys, it's the Bison, it's the Moose, it's the scrimmage. There were two, like, Lundmark and Holm are the only two Jets prospects in there. I guess technically Qua Evingston, who was a Jets draft pick, but he was released from his PTO. But it was a fun, it never happened in the Moose 2.0 era. That was the first time, because generally the Moose always went to Grand Forks and played in Fargo and Grand Forks, they played in North Dakota against Iowa usually for exhibition. So that was the first time there was a game against the Bisons in this era. They used to do it with the Moose 1.0. But I just think, to the point that Ez just made, whether Cole Perfetti, I could see Cole Perfetti playing another game in San Jose, but regardless, even if he doesn't, the truth is he could go down to the Moose and he is going to have such a good opportunity to build on what he did last year. Last year, all of his points came early on the power play. He was eating up the power play 5-on-4. That's when he was really having success. But when it came to later in the season, he was going to the hard areas. And I don't think a player with his intelligence would take long to adjust at the NHL level, but it's not easy. It's still a huge jump from the AHL up to the NHL. And so that's one thing he'll have to adjust to.
Alrighty, we appear to be running into some technical difficulties with Jets head coach Paul Maurice and the rest of his comments. We'll try and bring those to you. And
riveting.
he's frozen in time is what's happened here. So I'm going to stop sharing the screen.
I think Rob Mahoney has the best. He's pausing for dramatic effect.
The dramatic effect was certainly well done there by the Jets head coach's technology. You know how it is. It sometimes will glitch on you, and that's
luckily, Drew. There's a website that folks can go to after the end of our post-game show where they can listen to Paul Maurice's entire media availability in addition to any corporate vetties and any other players. What's the name of that website again?
I believe that would be illegalcurve.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Good answer.
There you go. Okay.
So how many times do you think we have all said illegal curve since we started this? Like, we're talking probably tens of thousands of times. Like, sometimes I just wake up in the middle of the night, illegal curve, illegal curve, illegal curve.
And now the delirium starts.
It's kind of frightening.
Like, it's you know,
and now it's 12:40.
But the truth is, actually, we can't actually pretend like we're delirious because we were doing post game shows at 2 a.m. In the playoffs. So
Dave,
whoa. Dave,
you and I were.
Yeah, no, I know. You but more importantly, Justin Fung.
I missed one game.
Justin Fung. Yeah, but Ezzy, the one game you missed happened to go like 3 overtimes, and I was in, I was at the arena till like 3 a.m. But hold on, got to give Justin Fung a shout out. Look what he's bringing up.
He remembers a legal procedure.
A legal procedure. The ill-fated bomber thing we contemplated starting.
I think Justin Fung wants a toque. I think that's what's happening here.
He might have earned him one, actually, based on that.
Getting a little colder out, and Justin's trying to get that hardest-hitting comment, right, Justin?
There you go. Oh, exactly. Kevin Hack came up with a good one. When was the last illegal curve penalty given out? We did that. We researched this. It was like...
Jason Spezza?
Yeah, it was like 2013 or... I don't remember when exactly, but we did. I remember looking into this a little while ago. I once asked Marty McSorley about the illegal to curve and telling him that that's how we came up with the name.
There you go. And what did Marty say?
He was less than pleased.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
The funniest thing is
I think that gives me a bit of a segue. I want to give a shout out to the founder of Illegal Curve. In case you missed some of the tweets earlier today, our friend Richard Pollock, formerly, you know, of this show, formerly of the professional scout for the Florida Panthers. Are you talking about Richie?
Richard Pollock you're talking about.
I'm talking about our friend Richie is now a professional scout for the Toronto Maple Leafs as of this season. So in case you missed that news on the Twitter box earlier today, a shout out to our friend Richard, or Richie as it were, who's now with the Leafs organization as a professional scout. Drew,
because I already asked, you know, Richie if I could get Shanny's phone number, and Rich is like, what are you talking about? But
Rich is like, who are you?
He's like, why, how did you get this number? Phone number?
That's what he said. He wanted to know how he got your phone number. That's I think that's how it worked. Some comments, guys, from some of the your thoughts on some of the other newcomers to the Winnipeg Jets, particularly the guys on the back end, Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt. I think, you know, your thoughts on some of their performance tonight. I thought Dillon was probably more noticeable than Schmidt in that he, you know, a couple different times he threw his body around and the physical side of the game, which we, you know to expect from him, I thought was more noticeable. But just I guess some comments on both of them in the course of tonight's season opening defeat.
Yeah, I mean, we know, as you mentioned, Drew, I mean, Dillon, you're going to see his physicality on a nightly basis. Obviously on the second goal that Mason McTavish scored that looked like it might not count, I mean, he was a little, you know, caught a little bit chasing the same player. I forget who else was the Jets forward there, but I'm assuming Neil Pionk was the other defenseman that was kind of out of the picture there. And that's why, you know, McTavish was, you know, wide open for that rebound. But, you know, I thought Dillon had a pretty decent game. I mean, Nate Schmidt, the thing that keeps standing out to me about Schmidt playing with Morrissey is that he's going to allow Morrissey to have more time to move the puck up and just to be, you know, a little bit more able to jump up into the play. And that's something that we didn't see a lot out of Morrissey last year, regardless of who he was playing with. So I think that's what stands out. I mean, Schmidt and Morrissey can both really skate, and they can move the puck quickly. And they were doing that tonight, and both of them were out on the power play. And obviously, you know, the Jets didn't get the win tonight. But I think, you know, in terms of stylistically how they played, I mean, even though you'd like to see them go to the net a little bit more and maybe have a little bit urgency, more urgency, I should say, at certain points in the game, overall, I mean, Dave mentioned it earlier, like, you know, this isn't one of those games where the Jets got absolutely, you know, slaughtered 8-1 and you're thinking like, oh, is this team really as good as we thought they were? I mean, this game could have easily been tied up in the second period by the Jets. So, you know, Schmidt and Dillon, I mean, the thing that you're going to notice about them is that they're consistent. They're rarely going to have bad games. These guys are veterans of many, many NHL games. So you're not going to catch them out of position a lot. I know some people in the comments were talking about, you know, Dillon puts himself out of position. I mean, Brendan Dillon is a very good defenseman. He's a smart defenseman. I mean, you don't get signed to that contract like he did by Washington Capitals. unless you're a really good defenseman. So even though he might have been out of play, out of position a few times, I mean, like, come on, guys. Like, you could say that about pretty much anybody on the ice in any hockey game. So I wouldn't make too much out of that happening tonight. But, I mean, I think it's clear that this Jets D is much more talented than they were last year. They're going to be able to produce a lot more offensively. We talked about how good Neil Pionk looked on the power play in the first period. But, yeah, I mean, Dylan Schmidt looked good, and I have no concerns at all about the way they played tonight.
Final thought to you, Mr. Manuka. Kenny and Rennie are getting ready to fire up the post-game show. So we'll do our final thoughts, and we'll depart stage left and let Kenny and Rennie take you to the wee hours of this Thursday morning now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that we talked about earlier and on the Saturday show was that idea of not judging this team until really you've had an opportunity to really see them for 10 games in, 10, 15 games in. That's when you're really going to know what you have in this team, what you have in these individual players. So like I said, individually, collectively, I think that's when you're going to be able to judge it. You don't judge it after one game. We wouldn't have been sitting here saying, oh, the Jets are the greatest team ever because they beat Anaheim 4-1. So the truth is you're not also going to judge the Jets and say they're the worst team ever because they lost to the Anaheim Ducks 4-1. Some people maybe, but I'm not going to. So I think, you focus on some of the individual performances, and there's going to be a collective need for improvement. Special teams for sure have to get better. One game in, you know, you're not going to, like I said, you're not going to lose your mind. You're going to get Mark Scheifele back. That's going to be a big boost. And yeah, so I think that's going to be a big focus. And then it's going to be a busy weekend. It's going to be a really busy weekend. The Jets are playing. We've got a bunch of shows. The Moose are playing. They've got a pair of games. They're opening their season up in Toronto to kick off the AHL season. So there's going to be a lot going on. We're going to be busy. It's all going to be on a little site called AlleoCurve.com. So if you don't catch it live or if you don't catch it in real time, don't worry. We will have it for you at some point on that site.
Ezra Ginsberg picked the hardest hitting comment on tonight's post-game show from our friends at Tough Duck.
Yeah, there were a lot of good comments. We appreciate all the people first off, you know, watching tonight after the Jets game. It's a late one, so I'm sure a lot of people want to get to bed and get a good night's sleep, whether they have to get to work tomorrow or whatever. I really wanted to give it to Kenny's water bottle because this is the first giveaway of a Tough Duck toque, but I'm going to give it to Goon just because you guys know how much I want to see Nikolaj Ehlers on that top line with Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele. So the comment was about 10 minutes ago. Just from a speed perspective, Connor, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Stastny, PLD, Wheeler, first line close to 20 minutes a night. I agree. That's probably the line I want to see next from Paul Maurice when he goes back to the blender.
Well, there you have it. Congratulations. I put here's the comment up on the screen. Congratulations to Goon. You have tonight's hardest hitting comment, courtesy of our friends at Tough Duck. And Ezzy will be in touch with you, Goon, to
No. Sure. Have Goon get in touch with Ezzy because
that actually makes more sense. Yeah, so Goon, either send Ezzy a DM on Twitter or email him at Ezra@illegalcurve.com, yeah, and he'll hook you up with your prize. Thank you to so many of you for joining us tonight. Again, a reminder, big thank you before we wrap up to all of our sponsors, our friends, of course, at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Boston Pizza, Tough Duck, the sponsors of the Saturday show, of course, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, so many great sponsors that do their part to help make the Illegal Curve Hockey Show a reality night in and night out. We remind you, we're going to be back Saturday morning at 9 a.m. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show back here on our YouTube channel will get you set for the Winnipeg Jets and the San Jose Sharks later on that night. And then, of course, Saturday night after the Jets and the Sharks, we'll have the Illegal Curve post-game show back here. Again, a similar start time, probably right around 11:40, 11:45, give or take right around then, for Saturday's edition of the Illegal Curve post-game show. Kenny and Rennie are live. We encourage you head over to their YouTube page. Keep the conversation going. For Dave Manuk, whose head is still on fire. For Ezra Ginsberg, who is at Dave Manuk's house and apparently having a sleepover. We'll probably talk about that on Saturday. I am your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night, good luck. Thanks for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, Follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.